Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Super Jackass. I'm Jolt, joined by Damien McDonald. It is Thursday, 3rd of September, 2026. Can't even get the date right, Damon. This is episode 424,
which is going to be a fun one, full of energy. I'm back at work today. Today was my first day back
after 6 weeks of summer holidays. I can't lie, Damon, I couldn't wait to have a few hours without daddy. Yeah. It was a blessed relief. As much as I love my children, they are very overstimulating in having had them for 6 weeks. Yeah. That was a lot.
That's everybody, though. Yeah. That's every person with kids your age. Yeah, they look forward to it. They look forward to that September, back to school sales and shit like that, because they know it. Relief is right around the corner. I got it. Well, I mean, that's why, like, if you have, like, the people that had money growing up would ship their kids off to camp. Because they just...
I had them in camp 2 days a week. So I don't know what I'm talking about, actually. It doesn't hold up to scrutiny, does it? I'd them in Thursdays and Fridays and pay through the arsehole for that. Fuck me. That was expensive.
Yeah. Well, we had, like they go away for the summer. You know what I mean? Like, they go into the woods with...
Away.
Yeah. Like, you don't see them for fucking a month and a half. Yeah, so... Again, those are the Richie kids that, you know, certainly wasn't Mike Micro. That's for fucking sure. But yeah. Yeah, so you're feeling it. How was it? Was it exciting? Was it... exhausting, a combination of both for the first day? Like, how do you handle the first day of going back to school out there?
It's a non-pupil day. We've got two non-pupil days, so it was just...
Gotcha.
We had a bit of training on anaphylaxis, which is a statutory requirement now. So,
what is that? I don't even know what it means.
For any children who have severe allergies, if they go into anaphylactic gotcha. Shock, then sort of what to do then, and using the adrenaline injection pen thing, all of that stuff. Just a lot of compliance training. So things like
no touching,
extremism and radicalization and terrorism. Just reviewing.
You're promoting that stuff there.
Yes. Yeah. So it's what's it? I've forgotten the name of it. It's got a name, but it's to obviously help you recognize the early signs that a child might be becoming radicalized being sort of groomed into extremism. But I was only half paying attention, so I only watched the first bits, which you get the little so you get these little videos of these case studies, like these fictional case studies, where they have a young man and they're facing this. It's a video of the young man, and there's a voiceover of the young man speaking about their situation, but they're not actually talking. So they're just sort of looking at the camera with the voiceover explaining. So it's really weird. So I don't know why they've done it this way. So they're just sort of looking at the camera whilst the voiceover is playing, explaining their situation. I'm doing a terrible job describing this. And their facial expression will change depending on the part of the narrative. So like when they're talking about the bit where, you know, oh, I got bullied in school and people called me fat and stupid. And then as they're doing that, they're not speaking, but they have to pull a face. They have to emote with a facial expression appropriate for that part of the story. So okay. Then they've got to pull like a little sad or an angry face. And then like their a parent will appear next to them and like, oh, my mum didn't really understand me at all. And then he's got to sort of turn again whilst not speaking and then pull like a sort of frowny face at his mum. And the mum's got to pull a sort of worried, concerned expression and sort of shake her head a bit. And it's just very funny watching them having to do all these different emotes to convey the nuance, the complexity of this story. My favorite one is this kid who gets sort of sucked into a sort of right-wing extremist group that's sort of very anti-immigration, anti-foreigner. And then he meets these people at library. And then there's all these like sort of unsavory-looking characters that appear next to him with, and they've obviously been given a directive like, right, can you sort of pull a face like you're a racist and you're trying to convince a teenage boy to also be racist, but do that without talking.
So okay.
They're sort of pulling these faces like, oh, yeah.
I'd be like, yeah, sure, I could do that. Do you have a white sheet anywhere around here?
So then there's that bit. But then afterwards, like, so after the teacher of the school step in, whatever, and then they get the help that they need and they get sort of qualified people they can talk to. And it's like, I realized all that was nonsense. And I ended up talking to my stepdad and he's actually not that bad. And then they'll have the stepdad next to him and they sort of look at each other and sort of nod their heads and smile at each other in a knowing way. And then he's saying, I'm going to give the racist groomer a name. Let's just call him, I was going to say Dan. Let's not call him Dan. Let's call him Don, right? Don tried to reach out to me again. He kept sending me messages, but I ignored them. And then Don's face will pop up once again. And this time he's got to pull an expression as if, right, you got to pull a face like you've just sent a message to the teenager trying to get them to come back to your racist group, but they've ghosted you. They've left you on red and you've got to look a bit annoyed about that. And then he's sort of pulling this slightly sort of sheepish, annoyed looking face. And it's very entertaining. But like I said, I only sort of paid attention to the first half. And now I think extremism is great. I'm ready to sign up for ISIS.
All right.
Joining the Taliban.
National Front? National Front, maybe?
Both of them. Yeah, I signed up for both of them because there were two case studies, one for Islamic extremism, one for sort of right-wing, like, English racism. So now I've got a foot in both camps.
We'll get your head shaved. We'll get some docs, some braces, and you'll be set. You'll be ready to go. Get your little Fred Perry on, and you'll be ready to go. You know what I hate is that's the stereotype. When the reality is it's a lot of that is just the opposite. You know, they're not really. I just hate how racist groups will.
I hate racists as well. Bloody racists.
I know, you know. Which I hate. but it's like, you know, how they pinch things that I like. You know, I love a Doc Martin. I think they look awesome. To this day. I like a Fred Perry. I think they look smart. But it's like, you know, it's like you can't really wear it. I remember I had a Fred Perry wallet. I bought in at the Fred Perry store in London, and that was I had it for a while, but then in the U.S. what are those jokers called? Proud Boys.
I remember the Proud Boys. You don't hear much from them these days.
I mean, they're kind of around, but they're not really a a lightning rod that they once were, but they, you know, they adopted the Fred Perry, the specific, I think the gold and the black polo with the gold trim. And so, but my wallet was black and gold, and I had the little Fred Perry insignia, and like there were times where I was like, oh, I can't even fucking bring up my wallet. I'm afraid somebody's going to think I'm a fucking, you know what I mean? Like they don't know it's not that. It's, oh, no, it's about rip hop and, you know, that kind of laddie thing.
Okay. Do you think it's safe to bring it back out now?
I got a new wallet, let's put it that way. So, no. And it, like I have a, like a kind of a track jacket that's a Fred Perry that I never wear because I just don't want that. I just don't want to have that conversation of trying to explain, you know what I mean? Like, ugh, I don't know. Just it, that's exhausting to me. I just can't. So I just rather just not bother with it, which sucks because I like certain things like that. And it's like, it gets fucking ruined, by racism. And racists, which I hate.
I feel the same way when I bought a load of, I might have told this story before, when I was living in China, I bought a load of wrestling t-shirts. They were all like knockoffs. They weren't legit. So I got them off Taobao, which is like the domestic Chinese version of Alibaba. Is that what it was called
in the States? Yeah, back in the day. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And, one of them was a Marty Scurll shirt. It was a Villain Club shirt.
Yeah, right.
And then when he turned out to be a big pedo, then I was like, fuck, I can't wear that t-shirt anymore. So very, very inconvenient for me.
I know. There's
many crimes that he has to answer for.
Right, exactly. Well, it's even like to this day, like I can't wear like a Morrissey t-shirt without, you know, somebody might even look at me and be like, just for poor taste, but I don't know. Everybody's got little stigmas, I think. Stigmas. I don't like the stigma. All right, very good. We're both,
not the CMLL wrestler stigma. Is there a CMLL wrestler called Stigma?
I don't know. I was just nodding in approval, but I didn't really know. Okay. How did you know that?
Because I think I've watched him several times on Fantasticomania. Although I had to check. It wasn't just a fever dream. Because, you know, sometimes you watch Fantasticomania and it's got that vibe, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's like you took fucking two hits. Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. I'm, for those listening, I am very much under the weather. And Joel has mentioned that he is, he feels it coming. Like he's in that kind of still trying to convince himself that he's not sick, but he's about to be sick.
Yeah, it's coming. Like the students come back to school on Monday. So if can avoid being completely sick for that day, that'll be ideal. But I find myself very irritable. I was really, really grumpy when I came home. I'm not a good dad anymore. I just like, tell the kids, right, can you go down and get ready for bed. And then it takes a lot to actually get them to go downstairs. And then I'll say, right, you've got 5 minutes, put your pajamas on, brush your teeth. And then I'll come downstairs in 5 minutes. And have they put their pajamas on and brushed their teeth? Have they? Fuck. And I say, right, Esther, I said 5 minutes ago, you have 5 minutes to put your pajamas and brush your teeth. You've not done that, have you? No. It's like, right, can you do it now, please? How many minutes? No minutes. Fucking do it now, please, before I lose my mind. And it's just everything, every instruction has just comes with
four more questions,
song and dance and negotiation
yeah.
that you have to do. And it's about as fun as going to Wembley Stadium.
Yeah. All right. Listen, I hear you loud and clear, my man. We have a job to do here. We're going to, as I said, empty the tank and see where it takes us. Thank God it's not a big, massive New Japan news
week. Yeah, it's a good week for us to be sick and tired, isn't it? Because
it really is.
Very, very little to talk about.
Very little, very little. But we'll make it entertaining as we always do. And we'll make it fun. And I will say, what a time to be a pro wrestling fan. You know, it's a lot to talk about in the grand scheme of things. Why don't we, you want to jump in the pool? Let's jump in the pool.
No, I'm still annoyed about Arsenal's transfer window. We didn't sign a left winger. I'm really
We crossed. Did or did not?
did not. No, that was the one key position we needed to upgrade. So we had two left wingers who were sort of okay. We sold both of them. And then, well, we got one, and we got this Greek kid who looked really good against the shit team and then less good against sort of a decent team. And that was it. We've got no one else. Well, all the other teams were doing what I talked about last week. It's mad.
Brain checks.
I swear, like, most of these deals, they're actually happening without any real money changing hands. I've read a good article about this, actually, right? So you see, like, oh, this player sold for £74 million, and this player's gone for £96 million, and there's £68 million. So most of these clubs, they're not actually paying the fees up front. They're getting them deferred, or they're getting spread over a period of time. But the club that's selling can book that sale in its entirety immediately. Even if they've not received a penny, that goes on their books and be like, well, yeah, we've got, you know, £94 million now, even if they've not actually been paid that money yet. So it's all just numbers moving around on spreadsheets, and they're all financed on private credit. It's the same as like the 2008, the subprime mortgage crisis.
Right.
And I don't see how the credit, it can be this cheap and available indefinitely. Like, it's a bubble. It can't go on forever. Like, and if that ever changes, then I have to believe that these clubs who are just constantly refinancing are going to get their pants pulled down. And I'm sorry to say, Damon, it's your lot who started this. It's the Yankoids who, you know, these American investment, like capitalist investment groups that have come in and started this process. All these related party transactions and all this aggressive financial engineering. And there's these new the rules that I spoke about last week, the squad cost ratio, which is designed to try and sort of prevent this thing from happening. It's inadvertently, I think, encouraging the clubs to keep moving around the money through transfers and accumulating debt so they can stay within those regulations. But again, the whole system just depends on endless access to cheap and easy credit and rising player valuations, which is going up and up and up. And it can't go on forever. Like, there's got to be a credit market correction.
You need a salary cap. You need a salary cap. You need a per team cap.
No one's gonna sign off on that, though. It will never.
So in every one of our sports, we have the league, so to speak, and then you have the players' union, and they negotiate a contract and salary cap and all that for the next 5 years, and then they renegotiate based off of current market valuations and stuff like that. So, could there possibly be a lockout? Could there be a point where it's like, again, we're talking about billionaire Saudi investment. I get it. But like, there's got to be a certain, just like you said, there's got to be a certain point where it's like, all right, I'm paying for a guy that, like, wasn't there a team, and I want to say it was Wembley, I could be wrong, that had a really good season and they were this close to being Wimbledon. That's what it was. Yes.
Wimbledon with the team that they ended up being dead. And there's other teams that have gotten a lot of trouble by just basically overspending and depending on money to come in, largely through qualifying for the Champions League by finishing in like the top four places. But then if they don't manage to finish in the top four, that Champions League money doesn't come in and then they're fucked.
They're fucked. Yeah.
But now that's not the case anymore. Like, we've got, teams that finished 17th being able to spunk hundreds and hundreds of billions, just moving numbers around on a spreadsheet. So in a way, whilst I'm annoyed that we didn't get a world-class left winger, there's something sort of refreshingly honest about that. Like, we couldn't invent one. Like, no amount of making up numbers and moving digits around on a spreadsheet could manufacture a world-class left winger. We just couldn't find one. That player wasn't available to us. So, yeah, we'll be all right. I still think we're the best team in the country. We'll see. We've got a very interesting game coming up against Chelsea, who are really, to me, they're like patient zero for this
moving the money around.
Sort of this, moving money around. Todd Bowley.
It's just like shell game bullshit, man. Like,
so Chelsea have sold 39 players this summer.
How do you have 39 players on a roster?
I know, it's mad. So we're playing them next week, so I hope we fucking batter them. Just put them in their place and be like, yeah, you could. They're just like an asset trading company at this point. The thought of them actually being able to do that and become a great football team at the same time just sickens me. Like, I can't allow that to happen. So that's your football moment for this week. Hey, I've got some hockey stuff for you, Damon.
Ooh, let's do it. Let's go.
Bo, B-O-E, says, Damon, as someone from part of the USA that isn't big hockey country, how can I get into the NHL this upcoming season?
Let's go.
What's the best way to follow the sport?
There's
also it's more of a comment here from Tom. He says, just wanted to let Damon know he's not the only fan of both New Japan and the Leafs, hoping for a bounce back this season, just like New Japan's had this year.
Love it. Love it. Excellent. Well, listen. I think we'll have a good year. I think our head coach was a large problem in that, because the way that we played, we were just constantly pinned in our own end. Like every line. Like usually you would think a line would be like, okay, you're going to get primarily offensive draws, you know, so that you can take advantage of. You don't have to skate the entire length of the rink to gain possession, enter the zone, and then set up, and then try and get a quality shot on goal. You would think that they would kind of shelter those people, those star players, those star. No, they didn't. Everybody was pinned, and we were always just like just hammered. We were just so many shots against. Anyway, Leafs will be better. I guarantee it, and they'll make the playoffs. Guarantee it. So excellent. How do you get into? Okay, well, it's always easier when you find something that you can relate with, whether that's, you know, hey, I visited this city before, and so that was fun, and then maybe they have a hockey team, and I'll just kind of latch onto that. Or, I don't know, if you want to go uniform, whatever. However, or there might be a player that you're like, ah, he's pretty cool, I don't know why. And then you just, so it makes it easier to follow something if you just kind of pick a team. And again, you don't have to be married to it. And then just follow them. There's plenty of national games. You know, if you're in the States, your TNTs are national, ESPN's national. Yeah. And I will also say betting helps too. like even if you just got into like a four man fantasy league, you know, and you can only pick from like the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference, you just kind of get a little bit more familiar with players that you would never know before. And teams and how they play and how shitty they are. And, you know, just grab two or three friends, or if you can get a league of 12, you know, you might shit the bed the first year, but, yeah, you can, you know, that's really a great way to do it. Cause you know, there are years where I've done baseball and I'm like, I don't know who half these fucking people are. And you just kind of wind up following and liking it just because you have a couple bucks on the line. I think it's the greatest sport on earth. I'm not going to lie. I think it's the most entertaining. Now's a great time to do it. The season is just about ready to get started. It starts in the middle of this month. Training camps open soon. I think rookies are already in. And yeah, so you're getting in at a great time. If you want to follow the Leafs, you can do that. I think they're a fun team. I think they'll be exciting. I think they'll play a little bit more of a more offensive paced game. Puck possession game. There's a lot of changes that happen. They have a lot of good core players. But I will warn you that by doing so, you'll have a great regular season. And again, if you're just getting in, that might be all you need. But when they get in the playoffs, it's fucking hell. It's hell if you've listened to this show. So again, one, pick a team. Two, do a fantasy thing. Like just, I don't know, just between friends, you get the get a feel for players and leagues and all that. And then three, just watch games. And you know, you'll find you'll be into it, and yeah, away you go. So, you know, I would say, I'm trying to think like who would be a fun team to watch. I would have said last year, the Ducks, Anaheim Ducks would have been fun because they're just like offense and young and incredibly talented. This year, I don't know because their defense has been just decimated. So they still have the offensive upside, but they're either going to be like, you know, it might be fun. You know, Anaheim might be fun because they're not going to play any fucking defense. So the fear is either the stars and the offensive people who are incredibly offensively gifted are going to have to play some defense, which takes away from that run and gun element. Or they're just going to be like, fuck it. We're going to win game 7-5, whatever. Fuck it. They're going to fun. Dallas is always a fun team to watch. I think Montreal is a fun team to watch. Buffalo is a fun team to watch. Flyers, Philadelphia aren't necessarily a fun team to watch. They're very low event hockey. In other words, you know, they don't get a ton of shots on goal. But they're they have a lot of talent. Hopefully that helps. But yeah, pick a team. Pick the Leafs. Go ahead. I dare you. Pick the fucking Leafs. And we'll suffer together. Excellent job. I can't wait, honestly. I've been so hyped. I kind of get geeky with it. You know, I do look at like offensive and defensive zone deployment schemes and, you know, quality of competition that they play against, you know, their line. And I do a lot of gambling as well, daily fantasy and all that shit. So that's a great way to do it. Daily fantasy is a great way to do it too. So if you're in the States, instead of betting on games, what you do is you pick a lineup every night. And whoever accumulates the most points that day, you know, wins a pot. So you can get in for like, you can play games for like a 25 cents. You know, but for less than a dollar, you can get in on the action and you pick your lineup and you go from there. That's a great way to kind of get to learn players and line combinations. DFS is cool. So get yourself a DraftKings account or a FanDuel account. Put a couple bucks in there, you know, 20 bucks, and you know, you could play 25 cents, they have 10 cent games. So yeah, you could do it on the cheap and yeah, you might win a couple bucks along the way. That's a good way to do it too.
I've just invested in one of these, dodgy Fire Sticks where you have access to,
I have many of them. Yeah.
Thousands of channels. So what I would like you to do for me, Damon, next time there's a big Leafs game, tell me which Yankoi channel it's on, and I'll sit and watch it. And but you have to be available for me to text if I have any questions.
Absolutely. Consider it done. I have the same thing as you because I like watching the Canadian feeds. So, yes, I will. Yep. Consider it done. Consider it done. Maybe we do a little. Well, we did this before. We did a fantasy hockey JCast thing, but it kind of fizzled out, but yeah, I will absolutely let you know. Well, you know, you'll know it. Watch every game.
A quick plug for some Patreon audio I did with Justin Frank, In-Ring Art. I think I mentioned it last week, but sat down and talked to Justin and had a great chat. So that's definitely worth checking out. And he sent me some amazing stickers of his wrestling and his Arsenal drawings, which I've put all over my MacBook and all over my teacher's planner. So I'm going to be the envy of all my colleagues and students. And you too can get some if you go to In-Ring Art and Pitch Imperfect Art on Instagram. And yeah, listen to the interview that I did with it. I say it's less of an interview. It's more just a chat. Very interesting bloke. So yeah, if you've not already checked that out, do have a listen to that. Let's move on then. What should we talk about? Should we talk about...
You tell me. You want to talk AEW?
Yeah, let's talk some AEW. How much of All In did you see, Damon?
Main event. I saw the main event. I limited it to that.
Let's go with that. Really... So the Bebler says, how would you feel if Will Ospreay kicked out of the Bad Luck Fall?
Bad Luck Fall. I mean, he kicks out of everything else. Why not? Why not that too? What did you think? What did you think of the match? What did you think of the event as a whole first, and then give me your thoughts on the match?
I really enjoyed it. The whole show. Yeah. Really liked it a lot. Actually, I didn't watch everything. I watched the stuff that I thought would be of interest to me. So that was most of the Trios Roulette Royale for the Trios Championship. I watched John Moxley versus Nigel McGuinness. I watched the Okada, Kyle, Fletcher, Takeshita three-way.
How was that?
I watched I'll come back to that. I'll circle back to my thoughts on each of those. I watched the Casino Gauntlet match, the tag title match. I watched everything else, actually. And I thought it was really good. I know I'm quite low on AEW generally, and I usually say mean things about them, but I don't actually have much bad to say about this time. I thought they put on a really good show. Not to the extent of which I'm sorry that I didn't go, because, again, just traveling to Wembley is a miserable experience. And I was just really happy watching it on my massive TV on my illegal Fire Stick. I had a blast. I think it might be one of the best shows that they've done, certainly one of the best shows that they've done that I've watched. And I'm not hugely emotionally invested in it, but yeah, I thought it was really, really strong. I thought they did a tremendous job, actually.
Yeah. It looked spectacular. The venue, the crowd, the stage setup, the lighting, the pyro, everything that I saw looked like this is a legitimate, and, you know, to be shocked by that is silly because they've been legitimate for quite a while now. But, like, it felt big and it felt special. Yeah, I thought from that perspective, AEW, Tony and the boys did an outstanding job. It felt like a thing. It felt like an event. And, we've always wanted stuff like this in the sense of we lived through many years of Vince and WWE being the only game in town, and like that was the slop that you got. And yes, you could go out and try and find other alternatives, but you know, it's not always on everyone's availability list to be able to get on a plane and fly to Japan, you know, or whatever. You know, this felt good in the sense of there are a lot of people that got to see a spectacular pro wrestling show in a big time venue. And it didn't look like anybody walked away disappointed.
Yeah, I thought, should we start with the main event then? Seeing as that's what you watched, and that's, I suppose, where most of the discussion is. I was actually quite pleasantly surprised. I came away from that match thinking that there's probably going to be like massive arguments online. Like, I thought that this would be like weaponized in the culture war, that it would be this versus Yuya versus Oiwa as the sort of, oh, this is what wrestling should be. That wrestling is boring. That's just headlocks. This is what proper wrestling is. But refreshingly, I've not seen any of that. And I think it's really cool, actually, that we've had these two very, very different matches in a short space of time as a demonstration of how different and how great pro wrestling can be. Like, I'm not as emotionally invested in the current Ospreay AEW storyline as other people might be. But even me just sort of parachuting in for a build-up that I thought was a bit melodramatic. Like, I think they overdid it a bit, for my personal taste anyway. But I thought for the match itself, it was great. It was pretty much everything you'd want from those two. I thought they did well in kind of following the formula of the first match that they had at Wrestle Kingdom, which I still prefer that match to this one, but they sort of followed that formula of essentially Kenny Omega just beating the piss out of Will Ospreay. It was nasty. It was a really violent match and just some disgusting bumps like the Tiger Driver where Kenny got, I think it was Kenny, who got dropped on his head. I was like, fuck me, that looks like a legitimate career ender. But yeah, really spectacular to watch. So they both did a tremendous job. Kenny, you can tell he's lost that spring in his step. Like, he's not got that explosive sort of floaty athleticism that used to have, which again, that's absolutely not a criticism. It's an observation. Like, of course he's slowed down a bit, but even so, like, for him at his age and the sort of the mileage he's got on his body to be able to put on a match like that it's brilliant. Like, he's an all timer and I don't think he's got many of those left. So I hope he takes some I imagine he needs some time off after that. I would love to see him be able to do, I don't know, one or two more of those type of spectacular matches for New Japan. I bet he'd love to do that as well. But he was tremendous. He went in, you know, full anime villain mode. There was a bit where he was sort of doing a little monologue at the camera. So he was sitting on the ring apron and it was sort of, I can't remember what he was saying for about a minute. I was just like, God, Kenny, shut up. Let's get back to the wrestling. But you know what? That's part of his charm, isn't it? That he's always been sort of verging on a little bit corny, but that's, you know, that's what I think I've grown to, I would say love about Kenny, but you know, that's part of who he is, isn't it? With the entrances, with the, I don't know what the anime gimmick was or video game was. My Hero Academia, maybe I could be getting that wrong.
Yeah.
Just a big old anime nerd, Kenny. We love him. And Ospreay, I mean, what an entrance. That maybe one of the best entrances I've ever seen. You know, I've been lucky enough to see some great entrances, you know, like Dominion and Wrestle Kingdom and that, but that might take the cake. It was like something out of a Rocky film, wasn't it? Just the way he's the pre-match video package with his mum and the montage. All the stuff throughout his career and him walking backstage and going past all these people who he's had feuds with in the past, and you know, Zack Sabre Jr. and Michael Oku and Ricochet, all those guys, and him getting the little nod of approval from all of them, and seeing the United Empire boys with him. And you know, there's a little bit of me thinking, oh, is it Callum Newman going to be getting involved? And he didn't. The only Callum Newman involvement was a bit of a shoving match with Kenny. And I did raise an eyebrow at that. I was thinking, are we going to get Callum versus Kenny Omega? Probably not, but that, just a little breadcrumb there that, you know, could end up being something. But yeah, that entrance was just incredible, wasn't it?
It was one of the greatest things I've ever seen for a pro wrestling show. Like, I'm not saying that to, I really was. Like, name me another. Like, there have been entrances that have been incredibly emotional. You know, you talk about like Kenta Kobashi's return and his retirement, coming back from cancer and everything, and his retirement. That, I mean, that the building was just electric. That said, like that was, you know, that was more of him, like people just celebrating him, as opposed to this, which was just a masterpiece. I really thought it was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. A lot of times pro wrestling will lean into incredibly hokey. And I don't know, this is like, it's kind of like, you know, you watching a movie and you're invested in the characters, and then, you know, maybe 5 years later, there's the sequel, and then, you know, you get your little breadcrumb things, and that person, you know, that was the vibe of it. And it didn't go over the top. I thought it was just so well done. And again, the mom doing the voiceover for the video package and the Who, you know, they probably spent a couple bucks on that. And that's one thing, I got to be honest with you. I love this idea of companies, wrestling companies, digging into their fucking wallets and having this. And I'm sorry, you can't tell me. I will not believe it. I will tell you to go fuck your mother. There's no quote pro wrestling theme that can match a regular song for an entrance. I'm sorry. And I thought that was fantastic. And his wife, and then them, and then changing out of the track jacket and getting on the robe, and Mox handing him the flag. I don't know. I loved it. I really thought it was one of the greatest things I've ever seen in pro wrestling. And I got to tip my cap to AEW for putting that together. Like, that was so well done. I've probably watched the entrance more than I've watched the match. That's how good it is. It's goose bumping me. And just an outstanding job. I can't put it over enough. And here's the thing too. Like, you can't do that, you know, at Wrestling Duntaku. You know, you can't do that at wherever. Like that package, that video package was, it met the moment. You know what I mean? And it helped enhance the moment of 60, 70,000 in Wembley, like ready for a fucking epic match. And then the match helped like just carry it even further. Like, what a great summer for pro wrestling. Fantastic. And here's the thing too, Joel. You said, you know, I didn't see a lot of the, you know, it was going to be used to weaponize whatever you think pro wrestling can be and what it should be and blah, 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 blah. I'm kind of thumbing through the black hole of the internet, and I stumble across like guys like Dutch Mantel talking about this match. And he's talking about, yeah, you know, athletically, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, they should have slowed down a little bit and given. I'm like, Dutch.
Shut up, you stupid old man.
Frank, Dutch. Like that's like saying go to an Oasis show at Wembley. Like, you know what you're getting. You're not getting dance pop. Right? You're getting a brother. Yeah, practically, you know, with a six shot of tequila voice, belting out songs. You know what I mean? Like you're know what you're getting. Like,
they need to play some classical music, Damon. Where's the harpsichord?
Exactly. And that's not really right. It's like, come on, we're again. There is a time and a place for everything. There's a time and a place for everything. And I will say this, is that you look back at New Japan during that, we'll call it that era, with Will, and maybe even before that, Kenny, and Okada, and Naito, and all those guys, Tanahashi. Like, they were the best at doing pro wrestling at that style, like at that level, at that, at those RPMs, and it's fantastic pro wrestling. Like, I'm sorry, it really is. And like, they did it again on a big stage. Like, you know, I got it. Tony Khan knew what he wanted. He knew exactly what he wanted. He bought and paid for it. And I've said it before. If I had those resources, I'm going to be very truthful. AEW would look not that far off from what I would do, like if I had those resources. He did it. He's living the dream. For all the things that we knock him on, and for all the like, he puts together these pretty epic shows that, I don't know. I think there's a lot that doesn't deliver for me, but there are, when it does, he fucking delivers and then some. I thought the match, and again, the video package and everything from bell to whistle, fantastic. Really, really solid. And I think something that, even if you're like, I don't want to fucking watch AEW, you know, if you're that person, I get it. I hear you loud and clear. And I think everybody listening to this show has probably either seen it or, you know, they're carving out time to see it if they haven't already. It's spectacular. Spectacular is the word I would use. It's spectacular.
You say all that, Damon. You've glazed this match and Will Ospreay. Yeah. Where the fuck was his never openweight six-man championship belt?
I forgot he even had it.
Wasn't that on the line?
Is he?
He's a key part of the story.
Is it? Is it really key? It's not even key in fucking New Japan Pro Wrestling. Yeah,
I saw someone mention that on Twitter. Like, oh, so now the AEW World Champion has got to, you know, lie down for Shun Skywalker on a Road to Destruction show for the never six man title. And I was like, he's not never six man champion. I had to look it up and be like, oh fuck, yes he is.
I know, trust me. I know. You know, sometimes Twitter can be great. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like if I, because here's the thing, because you saw it seeping in after the G1 final, where you're like, this is so great, this is so great, and then the fucking virus gets out, and it's like, here come the dorks. This is not great, you know, and it's just like, I'm not going to let it spoil my, like, I'm ignoring it. And then I'm just kind of waiting for, you know, the pushback on this, because there's always pushback. No matter whatever anybody thinks is great, then there's always the pushback. And okay, whatever. I challenge people, don't look for opinions online after you watch a wrestling match. Just fucking enjoy it. You know what I mean? Like life was so much better without that element ruining everything. Just like what you like. If you watched it and you turned it off and you were like, I don't know, man, it just didn't hit for me. Cool. Excellent. Keep it to yourself. If you watched it and you were like, that was fucking amazing. I swear to God, I can't sleep because I'm so excited. Awesome. Don't tweet about it. Leave it for yourself. Just try it for 2 weeks. Your life will be so much better. So much fucking better. Except, Joel, you are the king of it. Like, the one thing I was kind of digging through, I forget which fucking shit post you had. Somebody commented, I'm cracking up out, you know, in tears at the idea of people taking your post seriously or whatever, you know? And that it was the guy who wrote, it was the Yoshihashi thing.
I upset a few hardcore Yoshihashi fans with that one. Yeah.
Which was, again, the post was hilarious. Yeah, you sure did. In fact, you were called scum. Weren't you scum? Didn't somebody call you scum?
I felt really bad. Like, not that I felt it was a, you know, obviously I was just being silly with that.
And right.
Most people enjoyed it. But I just, then I thought about how earnest Yoshihashi fans are and how that sort of thing would probably deeply upset them. So I apologize to all the Yoshihashi fans, but that was objectively a banger tweet. I'm sorry.
It was fantastic. It was unbelievable. But the fact that somebody would take the time to type out, that is, how dare you? Like, so dumb. Like, you don't have anything better to do? Like, does that person follow us at all? Or are they just, like, searching for Yoshihashi tweets?
No, it started to get a bit of traction. It was sort of quote retweeted by some sort of Japanese language Twitter account. So, okay. Yeah, I got a lot of quote tweets in Japanese that obviously I couldn't understand. So I'm there sort of pressing translate. Most of them enjoyed it. Some of them didn't, but, you know, that always happens. But even the ones that were critical, that I did have a little chuckle at that.
Scum. You are scum. Well, they only knew. You're a sweetheart. We're just trying to have a laugh. All right. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. I thought it was they've been dance partners for a while now. Like, I look back, there was a match, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. I think it was 2015 they wrestled. I was like, God damn, they go back that far, huh? So, yeah, they have nice chemistry. They're just really fucking great pro wrestlers. I'm sorry. I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. What a great summer for pro wrestling. Excellent. Excellent.
I'm going to sort of pick up and dig a bit deeper on something you've just been talking about, something you mentioned last week as well, and piggybacking off a comment that Haram Phantasmo on the Discord said. We're talking about taste, basically, and he picked up this comment that you made saying, last week, in so many words, like, it's just your opinion. Why should anyone disagreeing with you bother you? And whether or not that is a useful way of thinking about taste. So his point is that it isn't, that some opinions are more informed or developed or considered than others, even if that doesn't mean there's like one objectively correct opinion on this. But the whole concept of taste seems to imply that it can be developed. So you can have an immature or uninformed taste, and part of becoming a more knowledgeable and engaged person is developing a better understanding of what you like, and not only that, but why you like it. So it doesn't mean that good taste has to look the same for everyone, But surely it should involve some degree of knowledge and experience and engagement with the thing you're discussing. And relatedly, isn't this precisely why seeking out other people's opinions is valuable when you do care about something? So when you hear arguments from people who have different perspectives, mm-hmm. or people who've got more experience who can challenge your assumptions and ultimately help you to develop your own taste. So I guess my question is, like, where do we draw the line between taste is subjective and you shouldn't care or listen to what anyone else says about the thing that you like, and some opinions about whatever, art or wrestling music, are simply better informed and more developed than others?
Right. Okay. But I would agree with that. And I think that's a smart way of thinking. And I have no way of, or not no way, but I wouldn't challenge that way of thought, except the platform in which you choose to engage matters. Right. So again, we could sit at the bar and have that same conversation, and that would go completely different than an online on Twitter. You know, a conversation about the same thing on Twitter, or we could have a conversation in a controlled environment, as opposed to, say, the Wild West of Reddit, right? And a lot of that has to do with anonymity, and I can say whatever the fuck I want to say, and I'm hiding behind a burner account, and it's because a lot of that challenging and that is not necessarily in good faith. It's, you know, it's nonsense. It's noise. So no, there's absolutely, if there's people that you respect and there's people that you can appreciate the time and the effort that they had in learning and in experiencing the thing that you enjoy, and you kind of want to tap into that knowledge, sure, absolutely. Nothing. Yes, it makes you a better person and a better get a better handle on things, no doubt. But you have to find a way to find the method that is the best way to do that, and be able to push out a lot of the other outside noise that you get in that. I don't. Once again, I think, like, the internet, I'll put it as grandpa-ish as I possibly can, I think the internet is a wonderful thing to learn things and to develop that knowledge and to discover new things. I think it is a absolutely horrible communicational tool. It's fucking awful. It's the worst. Now, if you want to say, hey, you know what? Let's all get together and have a conversation, or, you know, we're at a wrestling show and, hey, you know what? We're just kind of chatting about wrestling and you kind of get in on the conversation, like, that can be a good thing. I really honestly do. And this is coming from a person who fucking hates people. That can be a good thing. I've met some of the most interesting, fun, insightful, intelligent people just that way. Rarely is it, you know, done for me anyway, through a Twitter conversation. And maybe I'm just cut from a different cloth. So, well, again, I agree with the premise. I think there is a huge variable there, and that's the platform, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason why I always enjoy critically engaging with things that I do like. And, you know, for example, if I watch a film that I really like or play a computer game that I like, but sometimes I can't really articulate or put my finger on why I liked it so much. And then I like to seek out people who are well-informed, people who I do consider to have good taste, talking about that thing and explaining what it is that worked for them about that piece of media. So again, whilst that's not the objective truth, I enjoy the process of listening to other well-informed people, picking these things apart and explaining and describing how certain elements of it coalesce to make it a good piece of media.
And, how do you find those people, though? Like, you have to do some due diligence on that, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sort of thinking of YouTube video essayists that I might listen to, or podcasts that I listen to. And if I sort of try and think back to how I first found out about them, I've no idea. I don't know how I found them, but, you know, you just... okay, so what I will do sometimes, if I watch a film that I enjoyed, then I'll go on YouTube and sort of look for reviews on it, and I'll watch, you know, maybe about 10 reviews of it. 8 of them, I think, you know, that was just sort of surface level analysis, but there might be one or two where I thought, yeah, they've really sort of got to the heart of it and articulated things that I enjoyed about it that I wasn't aware I enjoyed about it. And likewise, like, they might sort of find flaws in things that I hadn't noticed, where I might sort of uncritically enjoy a piece of media and think, oh, that was brilliant, loved every minute of that, and then I'll listen to someone talking about it, picking out flaws with it, and I think, yeah, you know what, actually they could have done that bit better, or yeah, that bit wasn't so good. And all I
but don't you think that can change? And I'll give you just a quick example. So, okay, Oasis, On Top of the World, blah, 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 blah. Now they come out with their Cocaine album, Be Here Now, right? Their first fucking single is 7 minutes long. And they're like, well, yeah, radio's going to fucking play it because we're fucking Oasis. And it sold out of the gate fantastic. And everybody was like, oh, yes, great, Oasis. And then it was like, critics were like, oh, this is pretty fucking bloated. And this is, the cocaine fueled album. And it as the months and months and months went on, it got more shit on and more shit on it and more shit on and more shit on. But then in recent times, Joel, like the pendulum swings and it's like, oh, now this is a great album again. Do we all fall victim of that? And just, is that just age and taste and what have you? Like, I loved the album from the jump and it never wavered, except during that time where it was like, oh, okay, but everybody thinks this is shit. Is this shit? Is my taste shit? Why is it shit? And no, it's just because you just are barraged with, oh, this is shit. Okay, well, I guess this is shit.
So what you say, does the weight of consensus affect the way that I enjoy a piece of media?
Right, and does that also, like, kind of morph into, maybe not morph, but like it's just the sign of the times of, oh, well, this other thing is now hot, so this thing can't be good, and but then as time goes by, that gap kind of condenses, and maybe it goes back to being great. You know what I mean? Like, I just think there's so much out there to sway and question what you believe, that you have to really have strong conviction. Because again, you could have somebody who you really respect and you're like, oh, man, okay, maybe I didn't see that. Maybe that was hokey, or maybe that was a terrible song or whatever, but I really like it still. But okay, maybe they got a point. But then, you know, 6 months later, in hindsight, they're like, oh, actually, it's good now. And you're like, oh, okay, well, what was that all about? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think Will Ospreay is an interesting...
Perfect example. Kenny, too.
...examine this. Yeah, because I remember in the sort of infancy of this podcast when I was really enjoying Will Ospreay's work. It was like sort of 2019, I think, and went on quite an impassioned rant when my opinions were under attack from people who
cage match
probably shouldn't have really paid attention to. It's just like kids on Twitter, basically.
Right.
And yeah, then I did sort of become a bit insecure about my appreciation of Will Ospreay's work, but it didn't affect it. I didn't then think, oh, actually, because there's all these people saying he's bad, I think he's bad now. I was more like, well, fuck off, I still think he's great. But then in the pandemic, when he was doing his switch to heavyweight and he was doing a lot of stuff that I didn't think was working, I said that as well. And I, you know, like the sort of the lack of selling, lack of consistency, and the confused character portrayal, I called that out Whereas a lot of other people were saying, oh, no, he's brilliant. He's flawlessly transitioned to heavyweight, blah, blah, blah. Whereas now I think he's sort of come full circle. And yeah, I do think he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. So I don't think I'm above being swayed by other people's opinion. But look, I think we've been doing this long enough for that not to be a huge influence on the way I perceive things, because on a weekly basis there'll be something I've said on the podcast and someone on the Discord will be like, I can't believe you fucking like that, or I can't believe you hated that, you're an idiot, blah blah blah. And I don't really care at this point. I will be an unapologetic enjoyer of New Japan Strong, when I was the only person on the planet who was appreciating the work of, let's say, the Stray Dog Army or the Regal Twins or Jacob Austin Young. I was the only person saying, no, he's actually really good. He should be used more in the New Japan roster. And look where we are now. Look who had the last laugh, Damon. I think it's only natural to find your opinions influenced by others that you respect. It's just a question of who you're listening to, really. And yeah, it's like you said at the start, if it's people you respect and they're able to articulate why something worked or why it didn't work and that reason resonates with you, yeah, then I think that's really valuable in helping develop your own way of critically analysing the media that you enjoy or you don't enjoy. But there's some critiques that I agree with Aram Phantasmo that come from a place of ignorance. And it's just like, well, no, you've not made any salient points there about why you dislike this thing or why you think this thing is great. Like the little clip that was doing the rounds of the Nick Wayne, was it Bandido, the ROH stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, no, that's trash. I'm sorry. Like, I'm sure there'll be plenty of people who love that stuff. But if you watch that thing, that bit of the match, and I know it's taken out of context, and I'm sure other parts of the match were good, like a real curate's egg. But if you are saying to me, in all honesty, that bit of the match where they're just doing all that flipping and no selling and waving hands around, that is good. No, I'm sorry, you have bad taste.
Right, but then there are people that will say, well, what's the difference between that and Kenny and Will? And it's like,
well, I could explain that. Right. I could take the time to explain that, but it's not worth it because I can't be bothered and I don't want you on my side.
Right. You've proven already that you're an idiot.
If they believe that those two things are the same, then who knows what else they believe, David? I don't want to win those people over.
Right. Exactly. I wouldn't piss on those people. They were on fire crying out. But that really kind of gets to the point. I mean, again, on the surface, I agree that, all right, well, here's another example. So, and I'm going to go Dave on this one. So Dave, when I was getting newsletters delivered to my fucking house, you read it and it helped you form opinions. You can't lie. And especially as a person who, you're spending your hard earned money on videotapes of this product, that you're hearing about and it being great. You spend this money on a videotape and you're watching it. And were there things that he thought were great that I was like, okay, this is good, but I don't know if it's great. Yes. Like when it got into some of the, some of the flippier, like Michinoku Pro, right? Like it was like athletic, but I was like, I just didn't get it. And a lucha match or whatever. But now it feels like Dave, and again, I'm using Dave as an example of a guy who I absolutely respected, but now I'm just kind of like he loves this idea of, well, this is modern pro wrestling and this is this era's pro wrestling. And this is what, blah, blah, blah. And I saw some stuff going back and forth comparing this to Steamboat and Flair and stuff like that. And I think he says things just so that he feels comfortable in the sense that, okay, I'm still relevant. Okay, I'm still up with the in thing. When I don't necessarily believe it's in his heart of hearts. Like, I don't know if truly he believes that. And I think he just says things to make him, again, feel like he's up on, like, when he starts talking about New Japan, like, I just have to giggle. I'm like, you're not even watching it. You're not even watching it. Like, just stop.
Really? You think he's not watching it at all?
No. I think he watches, like, he parachutes in on the big stuff. Or maybe stuff that somebody else who's watched it clues him in and says, hey, you got to watch this fucking, you know, Callum Newman Shingo match, whatever. No, I certainly not at the degree that he did before. No, absolutely not. No, he glazes over stuff, and he does not go into detail. He's very 50,000 foot overview. I mean, he gives you the same fucking tired tropes that, you know, people who have checked out of New Japan will give you. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't watch. No, he doesn't watch. No.
Well, he's an example of someone whose opinions I used to, I wouldn't say live or die by, but I found him a lot more influential than he is now. Like, him giving that 6-star rating to Omega versus Okada was what got me and I think a lot of other people onto New Japan in the first place. But
true.
That's the kind of thing you can only do once, isn't it? You break the scale, and that was a big moment, I think, in sort of modern pro wrestling. Got a lot of people, got a lot of eyeballs on New Japan and Kenny Omega, but the impact of deflation, as it's referred to, means that now people just kind of hand wave stuff, and it's become just a bit of a joke at this point. Like, people think, oh, you know, what star rating is he going to slap on this time? So, yeah,
But again, that's my point. It's like, and I agree that Kenny Okada match, yeah, I remember being in Japan when people were coming up to me and be like, Meltzer gave it 6 stars. I'm like, what? Yeah, and I think that was the moment where things went downhill, because then, okay, well, yeah, the scale just moved. I just find it very funny when people get all fucking riled up over what Dave thinks of a match. Like, again, that was used back in the day so that people could go out and seek things that he recommended you watch, as opposed to this, you know,
everyone's watching everything now.
So right. Right.
It's not like, oh, here's a hidden gem you might not have seen. It's just
correct.
Let's argue about what particular quarter star, and, you know, if he's gone too high or too low, and
right,
whatever, because everyone's watching, everyone's got access to everything at their fingertips.
Absolutely correct. Yep. I mean, that's a good thing and a bad thing. So there you go. All right. Good.
I think it was quite intentional that Callum Newman was so heavily involved in that match, like him being ringside and him getting involved with Kenny Omega. I do wonder if that was Tony Khan's way of saying, this is what you could be having in a few years if you play your cards right. And I don't think is something that was necessarily going to sway Callum Newman to join AEW eventually, because, you know, Tony Khan didn't need to do that, right? He put enough digits on the check, and yeah, most people are going to sign. But I did think that was intentional to have him getting a very close-up view of the kind of presentation and pageantry and stardom that he could taste in his future. Like, I think we're all realistic enough to know that it's a question of when, not if. But
yeah,
I was just like, as I saw him being there, I was just like, okay, yeah, I see what's happening here.
Oh yeah, I mean, not for nothing. You go to Wembley and you see that crowd, and yeah, I'm sure that conversation, or at least the thought for all of those guys, whether it be Hanare, whether it be whomever, right? And even people that weren't there that saw it were like, okay. I mean, how do you go from that and then go ramble on back to some fucking gymnasium in Nagoya. You know, it's like, oh, okay. I mean, and again, it's not like AEW is running Wembley every week, mind you, but you know, it's a nice payday. It's a, and you're in a marquee venue on a big time stage. Yeah. Yeah.
I think you can sort of look back to 3 years ago at All In, the one I went to, the really bad one, and that had a Will Ospreay, Chris Jericho singles match where Ospreay got the big entrance and the all of the bells and whistles and everything. And I think at that point he was still pretty much with New Japan full time, if I've got my dates correct here. But again, that was just very clearly, look, this is what you could have if you signed with us. And yeah, 3 years later, he's got that and then some. So, I mean, interestingly, Ospreay has said that he's going to make his own, I think he said he's going to make his own United Empire in AEW.
Correct.
He's recruiting people. So I'm interested to see how this sort of plays out with the Ospreay, Callum Newman future feud, if that is still going ahead. I assume it will, but I still think Wrestle Kingdom match is probable. And if Ospreay is still going to be world champion, then is that, you know, match you want to do at Wrestle Kingdom to have Ospreay defending the AEW title against Callum Newman at Wrestle Kingdom, or will he have dropped it by then? Like, do you still think that an Ospreay Newman match is a singles match is inevitable?
I do. I think so. And I'll go so far as to say this, Joel. I love the fact that there really wasn't a ton of question mark. Like, your attention was not diverted to, oh, is this going to be Callum Newman planting more seeds? Like, he played the straight man in this. And, correct me if I'm wrong, previously on the Rev Pro show that weekend, like, Ospreay called him out and was like, hey, I need you to be in my corner. Will you be there? Yep. And they had a big hugathon and all that stuff. So again, all of those things, you know, in actuality are planting seeds, but it wasn't like you were beaten over the head with the fucking hammer, the pro wrestling hammer to get to that point. Yeah. I think that's one thing New Japan still has as a money match. Absolutely. Between those two. And I think it eventually will happen. But yeah, I like the idea that, you know, Newman played it straight and there wasn't any hint of dissension. And as a matter of fact, it was more of, ooh, the possibility of something going on with Kenny. I think that's still in the cards. And again, I think it's being laid out perfectly, quite honestly.
If I'm going to get a bit sentimental, like, obviously, right, if we sort of put the kayfabe stuff aside, Ospreay and Newman obviously have like a very close relationship, and Ospreay's done a lot for Callum Newman to help him get these opportunities. And in real life, I imagine he looks up to him as a mentor. So I saw some of the, I think it was like selfie photos or videos in the aftermath of the match with Callum Newman and Henare and Akira and Andrade was there as well, and Ospreay celebrating ringside after the show. And it's something that I think it was Rich Craich says, like, you can see it in their eyes, like when they could kind of drop the pro wrestling character and you can see like a genuine emotion in the performer's eyes. And you could just see it, like Callum Newman, it's genuine happiness for his friend and mentor to have that big moment. And I think it was just nice for them to have that and not have to, for him to sort of be in pro wrestling baddie mode to, you know, try and cost him the match or whatever. So even though that would have been very, very funny. It was just a nice moment. I saw those videos and pictures and I thought, oh, that's pretty cool that they were able to celebrate that.
I agree. I mean, go back to G1 and what was also a little, you know, subtle highlight of all this was Zach, you know, and his reactions and the glow on his face and, you know, the fact that he, you know, his guys were making it happen. Again, when you have real, actual, tangible emotion, real human emotion, not cosplay, you know, as Lanza would say, community theater, bullshit pro wrestling acting. Like when it's real, yeah, it's truly the thing that will stick with people the most. Like, you know, you want genuine emotion, and you will receive genuine emotion in return. That's one of the things that makes pro wrestling so great, you know, is when you get those little nuggets. Because again, when you receive genuine emotion in return, you're giving genuine emotion.
Just give quick thoughts on the rest of the show. I don't know if anyone really cares at this point. I thought the Mercedes Monet Willow Nightingale match was fantastic.
I'm really not reading
nasty,
it.
Nasty, ugly, violent, bloody match. Which is no surprise. I mean, they had what was on its way to being a really great match in New Japan before Mercedes got hurt, and that led to Willow Nightingale inadvertently winning that title that maybe she wasn't supposed to be winning. And I kind of miss having those women's matches on New Japan shows. I don't want to open that can of worms again, but Mercedes Moné, just brilliant, brilliant wrestler. Darby Allin, Kevin Knight. I get very, very cool to see Kevin Knight getting a big spot like this, getting a big featured, I say singles match. I mean, there was a lot of run-ins and shenanigans, but again, a guy that if I can pat myself on the back that I watched on these empty arena strong shows and said, look, this kid's got something, he's going places, and now to see him getting a big match at Wembley Stadium, that's great. You know, I'm sad that things didn't work out for him in New Japan and they weren't able to elevate him to the level that he's probably capable of. And as they do in New Japan, they take the times with things and probably missed some big opportunities there with Kevin Knight, but maybe he'll come back one day. Who knows? But I just, yeah, nice moment for him. One of my things that I really hate about AEW that makes racism it borderline unwatchable for me. No, I like racism. No, I'm
joking.
It's Cope. Adam Copeland, Edge.
Oh, Edge.
When he does his entrance and then the music stops and then the crowd sing along.
Sings.
And then he looks around like, oh my God, I can't believe everyone's singing the lyrics to my song, even though it happens at every single fucking show that he does. And he's got this stupid expression on his face with his stupid melty... He looks like a melted bird. And he's like looking around in disbelief like, what's going on? It's like, just fucking stop it, you absolute charlatan. That annoys me. That is the one thing that I think really, really irritated me on this show.
Okay, and why did you hate it? Why did you hate it? I just talked about it. Why did it not land with you?
Because it's inauthentic.
Thank you very much. Yes. We can see through that. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
You can sniff it out. Yeah. What else was good? The Okada Fletcher Takeshita three-way. Like I hate three-way matches, and this was very guilty of some of the worst tropes of a three-way match. Guys just taking a nap ringside while the other two do a singles match. But there was, like, the stuff between Fletcher and Takeshita was really good. There was a moment where he did a kind of double German super. No, he was doing like some sort of bridge pinning attempt on Okada and then did a German suplex on Fletcher and was sort of pinning Okada underneath him and then pinning Fletcher with a German suplex hold at the same time. And that was really cool. Okada, he just looks completely checked out at this point. And again, not a criticism. He's put his hard work in and he deserves to take it easy and earn his money. But it's quite shocking to me how little he seems to give a shit. Like I thought I didn't think it would be this bad, but man, he's really, really phoning it in. It's quite remarkable.
It is amazing how you have him, and if you want to put Shinsuke in that mix, by all means. But when these guys sign with North American companies, boy, it's like they have this level where it's like, oh, okay, yes, okay, well, this might be interesting, or you know, at least like a month or a 6 month time. Okada's was so drastically like, whoa, what are we doing? Is he hurt? I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, it does feel like he's, I don't know. Maybe he's so used to, and I don't want to say not giving a fuck, but like he's become okay putting in a 7 as opposed to 9.5, 10s. Like he's okay. I gave you a 6.5. That's good enough, right? Yep. Okay.
Yeah, good for him. Why should he bust his balls? You know, he's done all that, and now he can take it easy. And Okada phoning it in is probably a lot better than 95% of wrestlers trying their hardest. So yeah. I'll allow him that. That's fine. And it's funny as well. Moxley versus Nigel McGuinness. That was really good as well. That was a sort of very kind of old school grappling mat-based match. That was enjoyed that a lot. That was about it, really. Honestly, we spent quite a long time talking about
it. We spent an hour talking about it. I don't know what I'm going to put as the slug for the show. Like, how am I going to describe the show? A New Japan Pro Wrestling podcast. Well, yeah, we went... I mean, I guess it's better than going an hour and 19 minutes with dick jokes, but, you know, is
it? And again, we'll probably get pelters for this. Like, I imagine that there might be some people listening to this getting really annoyed at me and us for speaking this long about AEW and praising it.
There's nothing to talk about. What are we going to talk about?
And also, I genuinely thought it was a really, really good show.
I did too.
I can't be a grifter and be like, oh, it was rubbish and pretend it was bad. It wasn't. Like, again, I sort of say objective. Was it objectively a good show? As far
it was a good
as
show.
Concerned, it was a very good show. It did well. Yep. Got a hand it to ISIS here. Anyway, let's move on from that. There are 4 televised New Japan shows coming up.
Okay.
And there's not really that much to preview in it. I'll read you the card. Okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll read you the cards.
Okay.
And if you think there is something you want to say...
Okay.
Remarkable or noteworthy about a match.
Okay.
Just interrupt me.
All right.
Okay. So Saturday we've got Road to Destruction from
Road to Destruction. I love the name of that. It's really sorry. Yeah.
the light cube Utsunomiya, which is a wonderful name for a venue. Yeah. So we've got Masatori Yasuda versus Taisei Nakahara singles match. We've got Jado Taguchi and Despy against Dick Togo, Sho and Doki. Then we got Matsumoto, Yoshihashi, and Shota Umino returning against Jacob Austin Young, Great Okan, and Henare.
Okay. I like it. I mean, at least Shota's returning. That's a good sign. Okay.
Interesting to see his position against here. So tag champions.
Yeah.
On the other side there. Great Okan and Henare. Wonder if there's something to that. I don't know. Basically, I'm just looking for what is a path for Shota to get himself back to relevance, because you can't just sort of moonwalk back in and be like, yes, I'm going to be, you know, exactly the same.
Oh, he's moonwalking. He's moonwalking right back in. You know that.
But yeah, I always just look at the people he's positioned against in the comeback match to see, you know, is there something we can read into for that? But again, I'll grasp at straws here. We've got Shingo and Jeff Cobb against Zane Jay and Callum Newman. So Jeff Cobb making his comeback match there, which...
That should be good.
Yeah. I like all 4 of those wrestlers, and I think that'll be fun watching... Well, I imagine it'll be Zane Jay taking a lot of bumps and ragdolling for Jeff Cobb. So that'll be good. We've got Kojima, Yano, and Makabe against Gedo, Oscar, and Yuta Ice. We've got Taichi, Yuya, and Aaron Wolf against Fujita, Hartley Jackson, and Oiwa. And main event is Watto, Oleg Bolton, Yo, and Goto against Daiki Nagai. Robbie X is making his return here. Oh. Taiji Ishimori and Yota Tsuji. So those are fun matches, right? Those top 2 matches on paper look like they should be a lot of fun, but I can't really preview or analyze it more than that, really. It would be intellectually dishonest for me to start
doing like, oh, well, this could mean blah, 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 because it's my tag match. What do you want? Then on Sunday, we've got the Yuji Nagata Produce Blue Justice show. And we've got Matsumoto versus Nakara singles match. Then we've got Yasuda Taguchi Death Beat against Dick Togo, Sho, and Doki. Is this the same card? Jado Kojima, Oleg Shota against Jacob Austin Young, Greta Khan, Hanare, Callum Newman. Then we've got a singles match, Jeff Cobb versus Zane J. So just copy and paste what I said about the tag match here in a singles match. Taichi, Yuya, Aaron Wolf against Fujita Jackson, Oiwa, same match. Wato, Yoshihashi, Yo, Goto against Gedo, Robbie X, Ishimori, and Tsuji. Main event, Yano, Makabe, and Yuji Nagata against Daiki Nagai, Oscar, Yuta Ice. So you'll get your annual good Yuji Nagata match there. It's a six-man match.
You'd think there would be... those are coming few and far between now. You know, you would think those will be... when you say, you know, good.
He'll be next. He'll be the next retirement, won't he? Yuji Nagata.
Yeah, he's next in line, I would think, right? Yep.
Then we've got a pair of Korakuen Hall shows. I got excited when I saw those. I was like, there's got to be some meaty stuff on there. So Road to Destruction. So Wednesday, Korakuen Hall. And we may be recording before this show happens. I'm just going to read the lineup anyway. So... for this show, we've got the Yushin Hatazawa debut match. It's a kickoff match. I don't know if it's going to make the broadcast, but Tatsuya Matsumoto versus Yushin Hatazawa, who I say he's the big boy. He's the ex-sumo player. So, I'd be interested to see like a proper heavyweight there, because I said the last few young lions have all sort of fit that kind of twink aesthetic where probably junior heavyweights, but this is going to be a big boy, Yushin Hatazawa. Yeah. So I'm interested to see how much of the sumo influence he brings to his style. And I don't think that's something that he will be able to do off the bat. It's just going to be, you know, your typical young lion fare. But as he develops, I wonder if that might be something he leans into, you know, a bit like Taichi does. Taichi has co-opted some elements of sumo. So I hope he does. I think that would be quite cool, you know, to see. I'm envisaging like a match in the future between Aaron Wolf and Yushin Hatazawa, where Aaron Wolf is doing lots of judo stuff and Yushin Hatazawa is doing lots of sumo stuff. And it will be like watching UFC 1. Taylor Tooley, I think, is the sumo guy's name when he got his teeth kicked out by Jared Gordo. Fun stuff. First match, then we've got Nakahara, Yoshihashi, and Shota against Jacob Austin, Young, Greta Khan, and Hanare. Second match, Yasuda, Taguchi, Despi against Shun Skywalker. He's having his... No, it's not his debut match. He already had a match. Shun Skywalker, Sho, and Doki. Daiki Nagai and Jeff Cobb versus Zane Jane, Callum Newman. Jado, Yano, Makabe against Gedo, Oscar, Yuta, Ice. Taichi, Yuya, Aaron Wolf against Fujita, Jackson, Oiwa again. Wato and Oleg against Robbie X and Shingo. And main event, a special tag match, Yo and Hiroki Goto against Taiji Ishimori and Yota Tsuji. And I'm just shrugging my shoulders at that. And then Thursday, Nakahara versus Yushin Hatazawa. Yasuda, Wato, Oleg, Yuya versus Jacob Austin Young, Jake Lee, Greta Khan, Hanare. Second match is Gedo and Jeff Cobb versus Zane Jane, Callum Newman. Third match, Jado, Yano, Makabe against Daiki Nagai, Oscar, Yuta, Ice. Fourth match, Tatsuya Matsumoto and Yo versus Robbie X and Taiji Ishimori. Fifth match, Taguchi, Shota, and Despi against Shun Skywalker, Sho, Doki. Sixth match, special tag match, Yoshihashi and Goto, so Bishamon against Shingo and Yota Tsuji. That should be good. You know, nice little heat-up match for Bishamon there. And then the main event, seventh match, special tag match, Taichi and Aaron Wolf versus Kosei Fujita and Yohei Oiwa, which... great. Like, I'm really excited about that one. That will be really good. I don't know how much significance there will be to it. I think that's just like four cool guys having a cool guy match.
Right. Yeah. That's probably the sexiest thing of the entire week. Thank God we have football and American football starting back.
Well, I know, because there's nothing to say, is there? Like, those,
yeah, really,
like, not to say, the shows will be fun and I'll have them on in the background. And then it's when it's the important matches, like the top two matches, I'll sort of pay attention and I'm sure they'll be really good. And then the next time we record, I'll say, oh, it was great. And then this happened and this happened. But it's, I can't preview these. There's nothing to preview.
What is it to preview? Right, exactly. I mean, maybe they're, you know, after the first show, you know, they'll have some breadcrumbs that we can sink our teeth into a little, you know, that's what you're hoping for. But yeah, we're just clutching straws here at this point because, you know, nothing really sounds incredibly sexy. Sorry, I'm in the middle of a coughing fit. excuse me. Yeah, there's nothing to sink your teeth into there. Sorry.
Yeah, so I would suggest to you, Damon, that we record next Thursday as well.
Okay.
So then I can cherry pick some stuff out of those four shows, because otherwise, if we record before next Thursday, then we're doing this preview again.
Exactly. And I don't want to do that. Nobody wants to hear that.
No. And to be honest, we did a lot. I've still got some questions here. Like, we did a lot more on All In than I thought we were going to do. Okay, let's do some of them then. Okay. Roiland Skipping says, what degree of correlation is there between sports broadcaster, podcaster, and former professional wrestler Damon McDonald having no recollection of ever setting up for a wrestling show, and his subsequent success in the business, resulting in him being known more as a sports broadcaster and podcaster and less as a former professional wrestler?
Well, to be clear, I was never really a pro wrestler. I was just a fucking clown at ringside.
Is that because you didn't help put the chairs up?
That's probably right. And I didn't want to take a bump. That's probably closer to it. There was a few times where I would, you know, the only time I would get in the ring is if I'm distracting a ref, if I'm, you know, throwing. There's a pretty cool. The back of Pro Wrestling Illustrated would have, the back page dedicated to one photo, and there's a photo of me throwing powder in J.R. Ryder's face. It was a really cool shot, and it happened to be in like a PWI 500 edition. So, you know, that always gets good traction. So I was just like, it's really fucking cool. That's like a little check box. I'll sign off. No, I just didn't want to get hurt. Like, cause I had work, you know, on Monday. So I couldn't really go in and be like, yeah, I separated my shoulder. Oh, how'd you do that? You know, I took a fucking power bomb from Donnie B. That's the reason. One, I wasn't good. And two, I really wasn't trained per se to do the stuff. And three, a lot of it, I felt like, you know, I was the ride, you know what I mean? Because I drove everywhere. Like when me and Twiggy were on shows, like I did 99% of the driving because I'm a terrible passenger. So a lot of times it was just like I was like, if you're booking Twiggy, you're booking Madonna because Madonna's got to drive Twiggy. So dude, that's really it. Yes. So, but no, I'm being honest. I don't remember ever fucking setting up a chair, because a lot of times it would already be done before we got there. Like all the chairs would be set up, all the ring, and then leaving. I guess we could have helped leaving, but no, I don't remember ever doing that. Nope.
Where else should we go? Dara says, what do we think Hiromu's upside is in WWE? Looks like he's starting off on the main roster. Is there any chance they book him in an interesting way, or will they make him into something we all regret?
You know the answer to that question. You know the answer to that question. He'll be Samoan by the end of the he'll turn in his Japanese citizenship and claim that he's from Samoa. Yeah.
I think he's going to be just wacky enough for him to turn into
Tozawa.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, like sort of comic relief, and it would just be kind of punchline rather than actually.
That's his ceiling, by the way. That's his ceiling. The floor is you don't see him ever. You don't even, and maybe he has like a weird interaction with Danhausen. That's it. That's the floor.
I'll make a bold prediction. I don't think that will happen. I don't think he will just disappear. I think he's got enough personality to not be ignored.
I would love to think that. And then you understand that he is in the most corporate of corporate structures when it comes to professional wrestling or sports entertainment, as I like to call it. No, I think he's got. He doesn't have the size. He doesn't have like. Where do you put him? Like what? Like, there's not a junior heavyweight scene on Raw, is there?
To my understanding, he is in a tag team with Nakamura.
Okay. Right. I mean, that should give you an indication of how he's going to do. You know what I mean? Like, Shinsuke isn't really this fucking massive player. I just don't see it. I wish him the best. I think he will be the best we get is he's comedic foil to somebody. The worst we get is he's like, you don't even know he's alive.
Mark says, do you think AEW will do a Japan show by the end of 2027?
Well, that would mean Tony Khan has to actually go to Japan, which we know won't happen.
Yeah.
Unless you give him a hazmat suit or something.
But can you not imagine, Damon, the Tokyo Dome all singing along to Edge's theme song?
Yeah. I know that's somebody's wet dream. Boy, oh boy. Why broaden your horizons? I don't think it's out of the question, to be honest with you. I feel like it's like I think AEW would run a show in Japan. I don't know if it's the Tokyo Dome per se, and if it was the Tokyo Dome, it's just Tony Khan kind of doing it to say that I ran a show in a Tokyo Dome. How cool is that? And it depends on the show and how well it will sell. I mean, I gotta be honest with you. I would say the chances are probably greater than not happening. I think because you know he wants to do it. It's just a matter of okay, is it financially viable to do so, and what would the show look like, and you know all that stuff. But you know that he sits there and he's like, yeah. Well, you ask him, yeah, I would love to run a show at the Tokyo Dome, absolutely.
Dean says, given how well he did in his matches with Zach, Callum, Yu, and Driller, do you think New Japan will be tempted to put Aaron Wolf in the Wrestle Kingdom main event this year?
This year? No.
Yeah, too soon.
But would that be a goal 3 or 4 years down the road? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes. That would be their wet dream. I mean, again, that's a long road to go for a guy who's just had his first fucking pro wrestling match in, you know, this year. But yeah, I mean that's their wet dream is that he takes off and he's able to grasp everything and able to do it. And we've seen, you know, every indicator that, you know, he's on the right path. But yeah, I think we got a little time, not next year, that's for sure.
Right, two more questions. So here's the penultimate one. JJ Stark says, did New Japan push in Okada so hard from the start, leave them with a lack of storylines for him? I always felt that no one has been given his rocket strap from excursion push because once he won the belt, he had little to achieve. New Japan never really found compelling stories for him outside of the title picture. It seemed to me like they want to tell the struggle and these rocket strap pushes leave out a lot of struggle. Is this why no one has been given the same push since?
I don't know if that's the reason, but I mean, I think that you're onto something. That being said, I mean, there were plenty of things that I thought he did. You know, I thought the Shibata feud was great. I thought, you know, even the stuff with Kenny was great. Tanahashi, obviously, Naito. Like, he had a lot of great dance partners. Like, it wasn't like he was short on people that he could have things to do with. No, I think he just got fed up with the fucking management. He got a, you know, he probably never thought he would make the money that he, you know, was offered. And he got to live a dream a little bit, you know? So, yeah, I think it was all of that playing a factor. And the fact that he could work it as a, you know, a 6.5, 7, as opposed to 9.5, 10s. Yeah, I think all of that, but no, I thought he had, you know, I thought, you know, at that time, nobody was complaining that, oh, Okada doesn't have any stories. You know?
Yeah, and I would strongly disagree with that premise. So it depends what your interpretation of a story is. But even
getting the title that early. He had incredibly memorable feuds with, you know, Tanahashi and Naito and Kenny Omega and even like the Balloon Okada stuff. Like, that was memorable. It depends on your mileage may vary on how good you think it was. But and when he was champion, having his, like, that all-time run of sort of 2017, 2018, that was right. The storyline. Like, who can beat this guy? And having that, the exchange of the title with Kenny Omega, and then the stuff he had with Jay White as well. Like, yeah, I really push back on this idea that him winning the title meant that there were no storylines for him. I don't think that's accurate at all.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about, you know, there's really two eras, you know, maybe three, you know, being the greatest in the company's history. And that was it. Like, no one was complaining that he didn't have anything to do. He had plenty to do. And let's be honest, also delivered in just about every instance. So, yeah, we were good.
And like, New Japan doesn't do quote unquote storylines the way that Western wrestling does. The storylines are, I've got the belt, I want to keep the belt, or I don't have the belt, I want the belt. And like, that is just, that embodies Okada, doesn't it? Like, he was the cornerstone of those stories in the sort of golden era of New Japan.
Yep. One more?
Last question then.
All right.
Aeropostal says, what is this podcast about?
That is a great question. I would answer that.
Good luck doing the summary for this week's episode. Fuck me, I couldn't even come up with a title for this.
Me
one.
Neither. And usually I'm the one doing it. I'm going to be like, I don't know, what the fuck? This podcast is me and Joel getting together every week as two friends at the pub over a glass of Guinness, a pint of Guinness, and maybe Joel might have a cider, might have something else, whatever the case may be. And we talk about, hey, what's going on this week? Everything good? And then we talk about the thing that we like, the common ground, the New Japan Pro Wrestling. And the bartender behind the bar just happens to have a microphone and records it and puts it on the internet. That's the show. It's New Japan Pro Wrestling, but it's how I feel the show is two friends talking about a product that they really love, and you get to eavesdrop in on this conversation.
Yeah, well, that's perfect. Perfect way to end it. See you next week.
Wrestling Omakase brings you a full-course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.